This is WKSU News. I'm Kabir Bhatia. Cleveland's restaurant scene has gotten rave reviews over the past decade, but the city has a long and rich culinary tradition which dates back throughout the 20th century. Many of those dining spots are gone, but not quite forgotten. They're celebrated in a new book, Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland. I spoke with author Betty Lou Higgins about a few of those eateries from the past.
My favorite eating memory of that time was at Chef Hector's, which at the time was in what I considered a very bizarre building, which looked like a warehouse from the outside. And then you would go downstairs into this basement, and you were suddenly in this big restaurant room. And, of course, Chef Hector was Hector Boyardee. And my dad would always tell us, you know, this is Chef Boyardee, like they have in the grocery store. So it was kind of a big deal.
And it was also right by what's now Progressive Field and another restaurant that's in the book, right?
Yes. Otto Mosier's was on East 4th, the original Otto Mosier's. Again, one of my favorites. It was in a little small building that was from the 1800s, the late 1800s. It was the Krauss Costume Company. And it was just basically a little deli. And there was a basement room that was connected by a tunnel across East 4th Street to the Euclid Avenue Opera House. And people would use the tunnel to get back and forth. So all the actors would come over there. And at some point, they started leaving their pictures signed to Otto Mosier's. And he would put them up in the most haphazard way in these crazy wooden frame things that just cover the wall. And the first time I went in there and saw all these old pictures of actors, it was just astounding.
There's one, Will Rogers, I think it was.
Yeah.
Tell what happened when he brought his photo in.
Let me get a quote here. He said, threatened, to shoot the place full of holes if he came back to the restaurant and could not find his picture. So there you go. I think we're safe now.
I think we're safe too, yes. Although Mr. Otto Mosier himself, apparently, even though they were happy, he could find anyone in seconds, right?
Yes, the rumor is that he knew where they all were, so.
One of the restaurants that jumped out at me, because I'm always seeing people post photos of it, and there's only a few, Captain Frank's.
Oh, my goodness. Captain Frank's, yeah. That was definitely a place to go. It was on the East 9th Street Pier, and it wasn't so much that the food was fabulous as much as that location was just, I mean, there you are sitting basically on a pier overlooking Lake Erie on all sides. And it was always very romantic. At the good time, a cruise ship would often come into that dock. So it was a place to be.
Tell people what's there now.
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in that area. The Cleveland Science Center with the William G. Mather is there. And there's a new building with some restaurants right there. But they're still there, so they don't count.
As you're telling me about these, and, you know, that closed almost 30 years ago,
yeah.
Otto's just in the last couple of years. When we lose restaurants like this, what are we losing? Because a lot of the sense I get out of the book is that the food was good. It was more the stories related to the people and the actual atmosphere in the restaurant itself. So talk about what we lose when these places close.
That's a really interesting question. And part of, I think, why you get that from the book is because so many of those restaurants were around for a really long time. So they had built up a clientele and a reputation. And presumably, if any of these new restaurants manage to hang on long enough, they'll develop that same kind of reputation and clientele that will make it feel like a major loss when it's gone. But otherwise, it's that. People keep coming back and forth. It's that kind of Cheers effect where everyone knows your name. And maybe they don't always know your name in some of those places, but you feel like they do because you're always going back to your favorite place for whatever the reason.
There used to be at Hopkins a little Cheers bar, and that's gone. Is that maybe in the next book?
Ha, who knows what will be in the next book? I keep getting people asking. Of course, that's not even in Cleveland. That's in a suburb, but hey, it could happen. It could happen.
What are some of the restaurants that they mentioned that you're like, oh, that'd be a good one for the next book?
Well, a lot of people are mentioning restaurants that are not within that public square to playhouse square situation, like Swingos. Everybody wants to know about Swingos. Elvis was there. A lot of the stars who played at playhouse square would stay there. The Mafia was there, which may or may not be important, but hey, it's the stories, right? And so that's one that always goes. Other favorites are in Ohio City, which is on the opposite side of the river. So people want to know about those. And of course, during the late 70s and 80s, the flats were just beginning to come alive. And so Pickle Bill's was down there. Of course, the Flatiron Cafe has a huge history, and it's still there. So people ask a lot about those kinds of ones that are beyond the East 9th to or the Public Square to Playhouse Square situation. And so I think it's legitimate. And certainly, we could do lost restaurants of anywhere, all of Ohio, and just plain restaurant stories. Food for thought, Arcadia Press, if you're listening.
Let's hope so, because the book, Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland, it's full of so many different stories, and I see that a lot of them are actually from the 20th century. So maybe give people a sense of what was going on in that era. I mean, not just the theaters, but there was a lot going on as far as shopping and all sorts of things, which necessitated having so many restaurants.
Well, yeah, Cleveland was growing. I start actually when Cleveland was settled in this book, and so Public Square was the main start of the city. And so as industry came through, the Ohio Erie Canal went through in 1825, ground was broken. It was completed in 1832. Huge hardware businesses grew up in the flats to build boats. There was shipping on the Great Lakes. John D. Rockefeller came and started SoHio. So there were a lot of support retail and restaurant and boarding house establishments all clustered in the downtown area as the city grew. And, of course, it kept going farther and farther out east where it was easy because there was no river. And, of course, they crossed the river and headed west and eventually south. So all of the major department stores that became central to downtown retail, May Company, Halley's, Higbee, Sterling Linder, Bailey's, they all started in the early 1900s through the heyday, which went to basically about 1979 or 80 when they started all kind of shutting down. But yeah, there was a lot of activity. The theater district grew up around. There was a district in the warehouse area just on the east bank of the flats. There was where Euclid Avenue Opera House was right at Euclid and 14th. The Hippodrome was down a little ways. There were burlesque houses around and other legitimate theaters, the Halley Lyceum Theater, the Star Theater, lots of theaters in that area. So restaurants had plenty of customers looking to come to them, with or without a tunnel, to connect them to the theater. So, yeah, a truly bustling city. And, you know, it wasn't till the suburban sprawl that things kind of made a huge left turn away from the downtown area.
And then about 10 years ago, we started seeing the restaurant scene come back, and it's getting nationally recognized and all that. But the fair is completely different. It's not – most of these, you know, are Italian, German, a lot of the ones in the book. Very European. Now it's Asian fusion and that sort of thing. Talk about that shift, because in between there was 30-some years there where really it was just places like the Winking Lizard.
Yeah.
Not to put them down. I'm just saying that they're –
No, I know. Yeah. But you're right. It was basic food. But don't forget, in the – mid-70s to about the time when Playhouse Square Theaters really took off. So that would be about 1982, thereabouts. There was not a lot of activity downtown. The theaters were closing up. People were afraid to come downtown. So there weren't a lot of new restaurants open, and it wasn't the say, casual, let's sit back and eat and talk kind of dining. You came in, you ate your hamburger, and you left kind of thing. So that's just my take on it. It wasn't like I was down here constantly eating, but there was that whole change in attitude. Once the theaters opened up and activity started coming back, then people started coming down and there was a change in, well, downtown's a good place to be. We had the Rusty Scupper that had basically its own shows in the restaurant for a while. And there were lots of places to see and go to. So that helped a lot. And then as our food taste changed and we became more conscious of cholesterol and healthy eating, and then the Mediterranean diets come in and the Asian food and the Indian food and all sorts of new ethnic groups. I mean, the Italian population is not living downtown anymore. When New York Spaghetti House opened, their initial attraction were to the Greek neighbors who lived there. So they had the Spaghetti House giving Turkish coffee to their Turkish neighbors because Turkish people happened to live there. During the building of the canal, the bulk of the people living in that area down by the flats were Irish because the Irish came in to build it. A lot of Germans came in to build it. A lot of Italians worked on the Lorraine-Carnegie Bridge, now called the Hope Memorial Bridge. So the restaurants kind of fed the people who were living downtown. And some of that changed. And there's not a lot of big neighborhoods downtown anymore. People live in the suburbs. So you're right back to that again.
That's Betty Lou Higgins, author of Lost Restaurants of Downtown Cleveland.